another perspective on gas ballooning from someone who does it well. I'm Paul Plack, and this is Aero News. Welcome into the special feature. Thanks for downloading us today. In yesterday's feature, we heard Jim Campbell's interview with master balloonist Mark Sullivan, who talked about how gas ballooning is different from the hot air sport. Today, also from the Albuquerque Balloon Fiesta, we'll hear Jim's talk with Mark's partner in distance competitions, Sherry White. In addition to her unique perspective as a women's balloon champion, Sherry immediately impresses with her in-depth knowledge of a sport in which she has competed since the 70s.
You're part of a very eclectic group within the ballooning community, i.e. gas ballooning. What brings you to that? I mean, let's face it, there's so many hot air balloons out here, but the gas balloon group, that's a pretty small crowd.
It is a small crowd, and I'm glad you enjoy our big family. We have a wonderful family of balloonists. I've been flying balloons since I was 13 years old. My dad's a hot air pilot, and I grew up in the sport and bought my first balloon at 19, and been running a corporate program for the last 11 years, flying hot air, always watching the gas balloons, you know, out here in Albuquerque, watching them launch, thinking, you know, that's really interesting. In 2002, Mark Sullivan called me up, and his flying partner at the time was retiring and he needed a new co-pilot. So he called me up and said, "Hey Sherry, you know, you're light, you're a good pilot, you know, would you be interested in being my co-pilot for gas?" And I got off the phone and thought about it and said, "Sure, you know, I'm ready." So he brought me out here and we did a training flight in June. My first flight was just a simple overnight flight over the mountains here. We landed over in New Mexico. Then the next flight, I hopped in at the America's Challenge in 2002 as co-pilot. We went 3 days, 3 nights, landed outside of Atlanta, Georgia, in a swamp. People saw us coming out of the sky in the balloon and they'd called 911. So we luckily had the fire department there and they helped us get the balloon out of the swamp. They said had we stayed there through the night, we wouldn't have been alive in the morning with the snakes and the alligators. But so that was my second flight, and here I am today in 2010. We just returned from the Gordon Bennett flight over in England, where we launched from Bristol, England, and flew down through France and crossed the Pyrenees, landing on the coast of Spain.
Talk about an even smaller community. I mean, Gordon Bennett, that's the creme de la creme as far as gas ballooning goes. And, of course, it's got this enormous history.
It does. The race has been around forever. They take the top pilots from each country. This year we had 20 teams. It's very prestigious. It's an honor to be there among the best of the world flying. This was the first year that it's been in the UK, and I think like maybe 100 years. It was a real honor for them to host the event, and they did a great job putting the event on, and we had a good flight.
In addition to just an immense amount of skill and a sense of meteorology and micrometeorology in particular that has to be second to none, equipment here is pretty eclectic.
It is. You know, it's a serious endeavor what we're taking on. We know the risk. We know what we need to get accomplished. One thing, when you're flying these distance races, you want your basket to be as light as possible. Mark and I, before we even get in the basket, we spend almost a year training, physically watching our diets, getting our exercise, mentally preparing. So, you know, that's your first step, is you've got to get your body and mind in line. Then you start looking at your basket, and you want the lightest equipment possible, but yet you've still got to have all of the safety important equipment. This year, because we were taking off of United Kingdom, which is an island surrounded by water, we were pretty much guaranteed we would be making a water flight. So we had on board a life raft, a two-man life raft. We had big survival suits. Had we gone down in the North Sea, if the winds had been taking us that way, we would have been able to survive. You've got ELTs, you have transponders, you have all the GPSs, you've got your food and your water, obviously. It gets very cold at night, so you've got to be able to protect yourself from the elements. I usually fly in three pair of long underwear, ski pants, a jacket, a ski mask. I'm covered head to toe. I have gloves and hand warmers, booties, feet warmers. We have two big down sleeping bags. Then we have things for in the daytime. It gets very hot, especially this year flying over the Bay of Biscay. The sun comes out, and so then you've got the element of the sun to deal with. So we have sunshades that we can pin up on the sides of the envelope or on the basket, and we wear sun hats and sunscreen and white jackets, and then we're covered head to toe in white then in the daytime. We have oxygen on board. This year we flew over the Pyrenees, and although we weren't that high, we were maybe 12,013, we went ahead and went on oxygen just to make sure that our minds were fresh and that we'd make good decisions. That's, you know, the majority of equipment. You try to be as light as possible. You don't bring a lot of extra stuff. We do have a sat phone, and we use our sat phone. We hire a meteorologist who is actually looking at the weather beforehand. And, you know, he's really the part of the team that gets us to our final spot. He's the one that's watching the weather systems. He's watching the trajectories. We're talking to him throughout the day. He's texting us if he sees things that we need to watch out for. He's telling us, you know, you need to maybe try to bump it up a little. Can you get up to 7, you know, flight level 7,000 just to get a little faster wind? And so he's our eyes on the ground watching weather and telling us what to do. And then we go. You know, we're in the basket and we're set to race. We're mentally and physically focused on what we're trying to do.
Outside of the soaring community, balloonists have more meteorological smarts than any group in aviation I've ever met. But the thing that I've kind of observed for a period of time is that first there's smarts and then there's instinct. How do you resolve that in flight?
You're right. It's changed immensely. I started flying in the 70s, and we'd go out in the middle of the day and put the balloon up in thermals and think, you know, well, why are we flying fast? Why are we rising when we're not even burning? And why is this throwing us to the ground? So over the years, we've learned a lot about meteorology, and we've learned to judge the winds. Flying, though, you know, it still comes down to instinct. It's when I get in my hot air balloon, I know what the outside weather is, but I also am trained to know little shifts in the wind or little cloud formations that I see popping up. And so I'm always, you know, visually aware of what's going on around me. And then the balloon kind of just becomes an extension of myself. You know, I go up or down just like you would go walking down the road. And I think it's the same in the gas balloon. You know, you're always watching your circumstances, and you've got, you know, the meteorology to back you up. This year when we were flying over the Biscay, we were over a cloud layer, and the cloud layer was fairly thick, but yet we weren't sure, so we called our meteorologist, and he said, well, you know, it's not showing up on radar, so it's probably pretty thin. It's real important for us to know where inversions are in flying gas balloons. A lot of times you want to be on top of the inversion so you're not having to use a lot of ballast. So in that sense, you're using your instinct as well as what you're getting from your weather.
How would you compare the experience for you as a hot air balloonist versus a gas balloonist?
Well, I actually do like them both. Hot air is very easy. You know, you're flying in the mornings or late in the evenings. You're limited by those windows because you need the winds to be the calmest. When you're up in the air, it's a lot easier to see a landing spot and maneuver your way to get to that field. Gas is a whole different experience. Gas is a real true adventure. I mean, you're in the elements, you're in this basket, you're taking off, you're going to be flying maybe 3 days, 3 nights. So you're in this little basket, not much bigger than the hot air baskets. So you're mentally and prepared for it, and you're sitting up there, you're floating along, there's no burner noise, peaceful quiet, you can hear parties down below, you can hear, seriously, when we were flying over, right before we went across the English Channel, I could hear people down, you know, just having a party. You can hear the cows, you can hear all kinds of sounds coming up, and nobody knows you're there because you're silent, you're just floating across. And then the stars come out and you're looking up at this big beautiful sky, and the sunrise and the sunsets are just awesome, and flying over mountains and oceans, and it's just, you know, it's such a big adventure that most people just, you know, read about in books, and you get to participate in it. So from that sense, you know, they're kind of, you get different things from each one.
More in a moment with gas balloonist Sherry White. You're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
Diamond's DA-42 Twin Star is General Aviation's ultimate flying machine. Fly fast with the confidence of a twin for the cost of a single. Go direct over water or rugged terrain and cover great distances in the first and only piston aircraft with an advanced airframe, avionics, and engines. The DA-42 gives you options you've never had before, including the Garmin G1000 and known ice protection. Go where you want, when you want, fast and for less. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamondair.com or call 888-359-3220.
Piperjet.
Piper Match.
Global Expansion.
Meridian, Mirage, Matrix, and more.
With so much happening at Piper, how can I possibly keep up?
Get informed.
Get involved at facebook.com/Piper Aircraft.
Welcome back to the ANN special feature. Jim Campbell's talking with Sherry White, a woman's balloon champion who accepted an invitation a few years ago to partner with master balloonist Mark Sullivan in a team for distance competitions. Agreeing to be partners in this sport is not a trivial decision.
What makes a good gas ballooning team?
A gas ballooning team, to really have a good one, you need two people that get along. Because if you're going to sit with somebody like you and I sitting here for, 72 hours, you need to make sure that you get along with each other. You both need to be very trusting of each other, because you can't stay awake the whole time. You got to sleep. And it's a physical endurance thing. When we fly, we take three-hour shifts at night. Somebody is always asleep for 3 hours. The other one is up flying, and then you're switching off. And sometimes one of you might not feel well and needs a little few extra hours. So you've got to really be able to trust that person you're with, that they're not going to fall asleep while you're asleep, that they're actually, your life is in their hands. So you need to have a person that you feel comfortable with their skill level. You also have to have two people that agree that if circumstances don't feel right for them, they land. There's no questions asked. If one person feels that the weather or something's changing and they want down, you go down. There's no ego involved with, we could win the race if we flew through the night. One person doesn't feel well, that's it. We're landing, and we're going to go make another flight another day.
And final question, same thing we've asked everybody out here, your best, most remarkable, most unique, most interesting moment as a balloon pilot.
I guess if you were to ask me right now, my best flight would be the Gordon Bennett last year, when we took off in Geneva, Switzerland, and we flew down the Rhone Valley in the minstrel winds, went over the Mediterranean Sea. That was my first flight over water. I was very anxious about flying over water and how the balloon would react. And it was so calm and peaceful, and sitting out there listening to the waves underneath the basket, and you could see there was a fireworks show going on in Mallorca, right off the coast of Spain. It was a tough flight. It was a three-day flight. We finally made it back into the coast of Spain, thinking we might have to ditch in the Straits of Gibraltar. Three balloons went to Algeria. They couldn't make it to the coast. Just, there were a lot of elements involved, but it was just such a flight that I don't know that I'll ever get a flight of that magnitude again. So that one right now sticks out. But of course, just like everyone else, this next flight might be the best flight I've ever had too.
If you'd like to see the video that goes with this interview, find it dated December 2nd, 2010 in the archives at aero-tv.net. You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. Find us on the web at aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Enjoy your weekend and have a clear and unlimited day.